We are logged in on Zoom, too. We have nobody.
So, it is the Thursday, November 21st, 2024 Public Safety Committee meeting. I am here along with Alderman Tarullis, Alderman Funkhauser, Chief, is it Chief? I always get it wrong.
Deputy Chief.
Deputy Chief Mikulasek and Chief Jensen are the note taker, so we can start. No one's here on Zoom. No one's here in
Nobody's
person.
Nobody's here on Zoom.
So no citizen comments. We'll move on to minutes for correction or approval. Any additions, corrections, deletions from September of 2024?
Nope.
No? Okay, well then we'll move
Wasn't
on.
There, but.
Move on to new business. PS 2024-15 monthly reports for August and September.
Awesome. We'll start with August. I'll probably spend a little bit more time on September just because the numbers will be updated at that time. As far as overtime hours go, of the 95 and a half hours that we have, 23.5 actually 38.5 were reimbursed. We had 23.5 for HIDA, CPAT, and CIT, and then 15 hours for water park details. Skipping over to a couple of the social media posts and community policing, we had National Night Out during the month of August, which we had an extremely good turnout. The weather was terrible, about a quarter of the way through, I should say. We also did several back-to-school posts with school coming back into session, speeding, school bus notifications, and what the law is, and things like that. We also had hiring of Officer Cameron Bonner. Thank you guys very much for that. And we also had Take Back the Night. We posted for Take Back the Night for October, which is a domestic violence program and informational program. Jumping ahead to training, we had 916 hours of training that month. 640 of the 916 hours was the police academy for Officer Bonner. So we include that in there. It's part of our overall training for the department, so we included that in there. Jumping over to the traffic crash summary, we had a total of 33 crashes during the month. No real rhyme or reason on day. Time of crash was 1400. We had 16 of the 33 were between 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. Without doing just a full analysis on it, I am assuming some of it's high school and back to school coming around to that time. For both August and September, that's the time frame that's been hit for as far as crashes go. Traffic concerns, we had a total of 4 traffic concerns voiced for the month of August. We had a total of 30 so far for the year, the first 8 months of the year. 11 of the 30 are speeding complaints, 7 are stop sign complaints, 1 is abandoned auto complaint, and then we have 7 other complaints. Could be a variety of different things, parking, so on and so forth. Monitored patrols, we had 4 monitored patrol areas, Grand and Freedom, Rosenwinkel, Bristol Bay, Shadowwood and Pinewood, and Walsh and Greenbrier. We had a total of 4 details for just under 2 hours of time. We spent 4 courtesy notices, and those are done by our CSOs, our community service officers. We had 10 directed patrols. We focused some on Bristol Ridge Road. Primarily our focus is Route 34, Route 47 downtown, Route 71 and West Fox Street. I am going to talk a little bit later on about downtown and some of our focus is going to be there. So I'm going to hit on that in just a little bit because I know you'll probably have a question on that based on our conversation. Maybe. Directed patrol details, we had a total of 165. The top areas were Route 34, 47 downtown, and Route 71. We spent a total of 246, just short of 247 hours. In those areas, most of it again was 34, 47 downtown, and Route 71. Overall traffic citations were down 11 from this same time last year, and our warnings were up 312 as compared to August of 2023. Detective squad, we actually had a really good month with criminal cases assigned. I'm going to knock on wood a little bit that our cases, our detectives are holding their own, doing very well with the number of cases assigned per detective, which is really good because we've been killed in backgrounds. And so if you look at the non-criminal cases, you're gonna see we're up 39. Most of those are coaching backgrounds and new employment backgrounds. Remember, we do all backgrounds for the coaches for Parks and Recreation. Our total cases assigned were 71 as compared to 32. I take that back, 78 as compared to 40 August of this year compared to August of last year. So we're plus 38 cases. And again, those are the backgrounds that we're doing. We added something to the report in August. We added a school resource officer section that talks about all the different things we're doing in the schools. And again, I'm going to talk a little bit more about that when we get into the agreement with the school district and answer any questions you would have, and part of our purpose for tracking some of that data with what we want to do with it. As far as overall reports go, we're 24 reports up from August to 24 as compared to 23. When you break down the monthly average of total reports, our projected number is going to be around 3,700. Majority of those are 911 hangups and motorist assists. That's where we are up. 911 hangups, that goes to the ones, you know, people hit 911 by accident, or their phone dials it and whatever, and it's anonymous, or they have it goes right to KenCom, and we still have to respond to those the best that we can. Most of the time, there's really no place to respond. We go to wherever that phone is located. As far as our NIBRS report, the nice thing about our NIBRS reports, all of our crimes against person, property, and society are down. During this month, we were plus 6 in the crimes against person as compared to last year. However, we are minus 2 total reports in crimes against person as compared to the same time last year. We're minus 31 in crimes against property and minus 9 in crimes against society. So we were lower in 23 as compared to 22. We're even below 23 right now, which is a good sign. Hopefully that keeps up. And then our overall projected calls for service, we're averaging we're projected to be 17,200, right around 17,000, which is a huge increase as far as incidents go. Most of that is traffic related. We've increased our traffic numbers overall. And that's it for the month of August.
Questions?
No. Okay. Awesome. I'll jump ahead to September. 25 of the 22.5 are reimbursed hours, 16.5 are special details, and that was Yorktoberfest that we had. Several different community policing initiatives. September, we had that threat at the school that was written on the wall. You guys were obviously well aware of all of that shenanigans going on, and so we did post a lot of information on our Facebook page, and we title it Rumor Control. As stuff goes out, we know it's false. We're putting stuff out on Facebook to combat the mom's Facebook pages, because those pages were going absolutely crazy, right? And so we did have a burglary arrest last meeting. You guys, we recognized Warren and Roble. That was in the September monthly report. You know, an outstanding job by those guys. Our training for that month, and again, it's a Facebook post, we had EVOC training, Emergency Vehicle Operator course training. Where that came from was several months ago, probably, I don't know, 9 months or so ago, we had a visit from our insurance company specific just to the police department, and they wanted to do a police audit. And I think I shared some of this with you guys in previous meetings. Our audit came back fantastic. They had no issues, no concerns. They actually stole several of our policies, thanks to Ray and the way he writes policy. They stole several of our policies. The guy doing it was a deputy chief in North Carolina. He goes, you guys are really squared away. He goes, the only recommendation I would make is getting your staff emergency vehicle operator trained. Being that traffic crashes are the largest or the highest cause of death for police officers, responding to calls, driving code, we went and got 2 officers certified in EVOC training. We used our squad cars that we're getting rid of this year because it beats them up really good. And we went out to the water park in the parking lot and went through EVOC training there and got everybody, including our CSOs that drive our vehicles, we got them trained in that. Now that we have 2 trainers, we can offer up training to the other countywide agencies. And again, our goal is to make sure officers are safer. So,
Dan, we're doing that too, right?
Mm-hmm.
What? You can
see it's going to be right from the courthouse on the second floor into the cars to the water park.
There you go. But you got to run. Got to run. As far as training goes, we had 618 hours of training that month. It was a good training month for us. We had 44 crashes. 11 were on Saturday of the total crashes, and again, 19 were between 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. When we look at portable speed sign results going over to the traffic crash data, Center Parkway, West Kendall, we have, let me back up, we have multiple locations listed there. All of the data that we've recorded, we're getting average speed below in the 85th percentile, below the posted speed limit in all of the locations with the exception of one, and that was Center Parkway and West Kendall. So the average speed was 24.8, the 85th percentile was 33.75 in a 30 mile per hour zone. One of the things that we're trying to do this year, and we'll really focus on it and talk to you guys about it in January, is identifying problem areas that we do have in town and then solving what those problems are. You know, we go down to West Fox, we stop 300 cars, we write 13 tickets out of, you know, 300 stops. Are we really solving a problem, or are we doing the same thing over and over and over and over again and expecting different results? So our focus in 25 is going to be focusing on solving a problem and providing and holding our sergeants accountable for the actions or inaction of what we are doing as a department, because they have the direct result. One of the things we will do, and the reason I mention that now in this section of the monthly report, is Center Parkway has been an area that we've been focused on for quite a while, especially since that fatal crash. I know you guys in Public Works have been talking about the potential for redesign of that intersection, where that's at. It's not my world to get involved in, but our goal was to reduce speed, and I believe we've reduced some of that speed in there. So,
possibly temporarily, but yes.
Yes,
and that's 100%. What we do. We slow it down temporarily.
We're a quick Band-Aid fix.
But then, to tag onto this, the Public Works side of it looks at the traffic calming toolbox. Uh-huh. So the option of, what, 10, 12, 14 different scenarios that you can implement, uh-huh, besides police enforcement to reduce,
yep,
and manage traffic.
Yeah.
So obviously parallel tracks, different methods, but both with the same goal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously the goal is to slow people down, right? Make it safer.
Absolutely.
You know, we all had people, family, you know, our officers included, drive through this town. So if you can make it safer. The cool thing is, we'll talk a little bit about crime numbers, but the cool thing is we live in a really good community when I can't tell you what our crime problem is here, because there is no set factor. There's nothing saying we've got a burglary to motor vehicle problem. Do we get hit every once in a while? Yeah, but we've been very fortunate that we caught a couple kids. So our burglary motor vehicles are obviously down. Can we do an analysis and tell you that this is going to happen and do, you know, predictive analysis on some of those? We can't, because we don't have the numbers, which is a very good problem. Traffic's our major problem. So, jumping ahead to the areas, again, our monitor patrol areas and our directed patrol areas, our focus was on the same three areas that we talked about during the last one. We had 150 details for a total of just under 246 hours for those areas. So our detective squad, or let me back up to our traffic citations. We had more citations in September this year compared to September of last year by 5. We also had 262 written warnings increase from September to September.
It amazes me on those.
What's that?
Not a single seatbelt citation in that entire.
You know what I'm finding, you don't see a lot of people driving without a seatbelt. You just don't anymore, which is really a good thing.
Yeah.
Now, if I could get that to cell phones, that'd be great.
That's the next part.
Right.
It's always difficult to find seatbelts. Any glare on the windshield, you can't see in there, and you know, and just the nature of driving my vehicles. But yeah, I'm sure there's some, but I don't know too many people in my own personal life that don't wear them.
It's become second nature.
Yeah. And your car screams at you.
It does.
Yeah, you get by a car, it's beeping at you the entire time.
Older cars are the only ones.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've got to be much older that don't have the technology to beep at you. And
But we used to run IDOT details all the time for seatbelt violations, and you would write them all the time. I mean, it was easy. There's not even IDOT details for that stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. So, which is a good thing.
Well, I think it's the cars. You're right.
Yeah.
It starts beeping.
I'll take my seatbelt off just to swipe to get in the parking lot. By the time I get to the parking spot, my car's unbearable.
My mother and father-in-law, before when we pull in the subdivision, when they're in a car with us, they will take it off at the beginning of the subdivision in the back seat, and I still get beeps in the newer car.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, put on your seatbelt. Well, what? We're almost home.
In the seat.
Yep.
That's yeah.
That's.
Yep. It drives me nuts. As far as
if you roll 3.5 times and they have the fire department has to cut you out of the car and you spend 3 months in the hospital, you wear a seatbelt.
100%. 100%. And the good thing is, as parents today, would you ever tell your kids not to wear a seatbelt? I mean, so the kids know this growing up.
Yeah, it's second nature. We don't move without the seatbelts on. Yeah. We don't go anywhere. Put them on.
Exactly. As far as our detective squad goes, again, a criminal case is assigned. We're very consistent. We were one less than the same time last year. Our non-criminal cases were way up. Background investigations. That was the difference. We had 129 background investigations in September of 23. We had 17 this year. It's obviously we took them all in August and not September. So we had 121 less non-criminal reports for investigations. As compared to the same time last year. Total cases assigned, we're obviously up. Those were the background cases. And then our total arrests, we've been pretty consistent. I would see if we continue on the path that we've continued for the first 9 months, you're going to see probably 90 less arrests from our investigations division. But our cases assigned are also down. So I'll be interested to see how that goes. We have the second month of our data for the school district. For September, we had 9 criminal reports taken, and we're tracking criminal reports, non-criminal reports, arrests. We had 9 arrests in September, but keep in mind that's not putting somebody in handcuffs. That could be a referral. It could be a ticket that you wrote somebody for possession of cannabis in the school. Classroom engagements, we're tracking how many times we get into the classrooms to help work with a teacher, help educate kids. Student counseling outreach, how many times are we having conversations with the kids in the school about different things, whether they approach us or we approach the kids, or we're just out in the hallway having those conversations with them. Parental engagement, are we talking to the parents when we talk to the kids? A lot of times we talk to the parents, right? Or the parents have a concern and we're working with the parent to try to help the kid. We had one threat assessment and then one extracurricular event. So, I'm going to talk a little bit more about our SRO agreement. All of this is the reason that we're tracking these numbers, because when we get into the new school and the plans for the school district and the potential for a new school, the superintendent and I have already talked, he's going to ask for another school resource officer, potentially one for whether they build a new middle school or whether they build a new high school and they move the north middle school to the current high school, whatever that plan is going to be, they're going to ask for a second officer. I'll talk more about that as we go. As far as the crime data goes, our overall NIBRS reports for crimes against person, property, and society, we are down. We're projected to be 437 at the end of 2024. We had 493 in 2023, or we were projected to be in there. So obviously the numbers have gone down a little bit, which is good. Our mental health and crisis intervention calls, the month of September this year, we had all the numbers were down, with the exception of one, and that's voluntary committals. We had one last year at this time and one this year at this time. So overall calls for service, our average is 1,400 a month, or incidents. 1,400 a month, again, projecting this month to be just under 17.1 for the total for the year. So, and that is the month of October.
Any questions? No? Move on to PS 2024-16, the adjudication reports for September and October.
Awesome. So, Siever, you're going to like this. So, our docket for September 4th, two of them were dirt bike complaints. We ended up catching kids and wrote them tickets. They were found liable and paid the money. And you're going to see later on, we caught another one and wrote him a ticket as well. The 1145 North Bridge Street for a nuisance ordinance violation, that was a common complaint that Craig's been getting from his ward. It's directly behind, right next to Pins. It's Johnny Graham's place over there. We issued him a citation. He caused some issues in court here. We've kind of rectified that, and he was issued a citation and found liable as well. Knock on wood, we haven't had an issue since then. Moving over to mid-September, Most are admin tows, expired registration. There's a couple weeds and junked vehicles. As far as the docket for early October, the only ones of note, Chris, really go in your area. That's Plymouth Rosenwinkel area. Those were the semis that were parked there. We issued 5 citations. He was fined $100 on all 5 citations. Now, I don't know if he's paid them already or not, but he was issued, and we have not had any other phone calls since then. So I'm assuming that he is not parking his vehicle there any longer. So,
no further complaints.
And then, what's that?
No further complaints.
Yep, that's a good thing. And then that same month, we had another ticket written in the Bristol Station Park for dirt bikes. And then mid-October, we had 2 impounded vehicles and weeds. So that's it for adjudication.
Any questions?
No.
Let's move on to PS 2024-17. Resolution authorizing the purchase of 2 police vehicles for fiscal year 2026.
Perfect. So very similar to what we've done the last 2 years. We work with you guys and make sure that it's okay to do the preemptive strike, so to speak, on ordering vehicles for this next year. I want to very carefully mention that Sutton Ford in Matteson, Illinois, they have the state bid. We have been working with Morrow Brothers for all the purchase of our vehicles. This year, there's 3 reasons why we are going to go where we want to go with Morrow Brothers. First, they're cheaper. They're still by $2,000, almost $2,100 from the state bid. That's the first reason. The second reason is Sutton Ford, you had to have the order in by September. And when you sign that, you're obligated to do it. Well, this is money for FY26 budget, which I can't authorize. The other thing is Sutton hasn't fulfilled all of the orders. There are several agencies that didn't get their squad cars from what we're being told, Oswego being one of them. And then the third reason, we can be added to the list. Morrow Brothers keeps their list open until the end of this year, so we can be added to that list. If we decide through the budget process that we're not going to purchase vehicles, we can be taken off that list with no penalty. So all of that is kind of spelled out in the memo. Our squad car did increase from the price of the car last year as compared to the car this year. Our total per vehicle is $77,226. That's the vehicle and equipment. The vehicle's $45,245, and all vendors and additional equipment costs are $31,981 for a total of $77,226. So we're going to be asking in the budget for next year the approval to purchase 2 fully marked vehicles. And so I'd like to ask the committee to present that forward to the city council, authorizing us to do the pre-order and get it done.
All equipment's new, nothing transferred.
Nope. All the with the exception of a radio, potential radio, okay. If we have vehicle or radios that are digital encrypted radios. If not, we would have to purchase a radio in that. And off the top of my head, I don't think we've added those costs for those radios.
So we had the 1 radio this year. We just had to purchase, so we're good on all radios from mobiles and center squads.
Are we still? Is that under the KenCom, or are we coordinating their purchasing? Because I know
that's us.
We are doing it. Okay. Because I know that there was the radio purchases through there.
That was the handhelds.
Yeah, that was the handhelds.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we were different agreement. Okay.
Yeah.
Making sure.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to have KenCom pay for our mobiles, but that'd be awesome. That's not going to happen.
Keeps it all in the same system that way.
Well, that is true. That is true. So that's all I have for that, sir.
Any questions?
No.
Good with me?
Yeah.
PS 2024-18, the intergovernmental agreement and the school resource officer.
So, as you guys are aware, we've had a school resource officer in the school for many years, well before I came here. It's always been a very successful program, and how the school district and the police department and the city work together, as you guys know, it's always been really, really good. This year, we approached the school district knowing the amount of money we as a city are putting towards that. We cover all salary costs, insurance costs, workman's comp costs. We cover as a city everything. When we work a football game and the SRO they're asking officers to work, or they're asking for 5 officers, we foot the bill as a city for all of that. So I've had several conversations with Matt Zediker, the new superintendent, and I presented to him that I would really like to get an SRO agreement, number one. We're going to continue having the same service and provide the same service we've always provided. We'll have an office at the high school. The SRO will primarily be assigned to the Yorkville High School and the Freshman Academy. However, they can and they do go to any school in Yorkville School District within the city limits of Yorkville. We don't go to Bristol. Within the city limits of Yorkville to respond to any calls or need for police assistance that are non-emergency. If it's an emergency, somebody will go to Circle Center or Intermediate School, one of the officers dispatched. So that process is going to stay the same. Under this agreement, the only difference is we are asking them to cover all overtime costs for our school resource officer. Anything beyond the normal 8-hour workday, if it is a school-related issue, they will pay for the SRO overtime. If we have additional officers working details, football games, basketball, wrestling, dances, we would bill all overtime costs to the school district for 100% reimbursement of our overtime expense. The only other addition we added to this is training. We will pay for our MTU NEMR for the normal training we would have to pay for the certification of the SRO position through ILETSBE. We would pay for that because that's what we need to do. That's part of our responsibility. But our goal is to try to get the SRO to either an Illinois conference or a national conference. ILSRO, as they call it, Illinois School Resource Officer Association, or NASRO, which is the National Association of School Resource Officers. That's where they get specific training on what's going on in the state and in the country for school resource officers. Part of this agreement is they pay for 50% of that. So we take care of the general training and the 40-hour certification that we have to have for an SRO, but they are going to pay for everything else 50% and split with us. As far as...
Can we go to the...
Absolutely.
So yep. The 50, or the overtime.
Yep.
So you said anytime there's a special event, football game, whatnot.
Yes.
You said overtime.
Yep.
Is, when an officer works that, are they always on overtime?
Yep.
Running that event?
Yep.
And that's by contract?
No.
How is, okay.
Because we don't want to take staffing from our street level
yes.
to work a football game. Now, could we get some officers that are stopping over because they like football and they just want to? Yes.
Yes, but that's not what we're recouping.
Nope.
But you're saying that anybody who is working that event has already worked a 40 or are scheduled to be somewhere else, but whatever time goes there, it is overtime.
Yep.
It's not standard pay. It's
correct.
Overtime pay.
Correct. Okay. So we will cover in our billable rate, and I want to say, what's the officer overtime rate? Now, there's no admin fees associated with that. We didn't include admin fees on that. It's the officer overtime rate. So if a sergeant works it, we're billing them the sergeant overtime rate, and we will bill them once a month.
I just want to make sure that it's not, you know, an officer is on duty and regular time.
Correct.
Covering that. It's
yes.
Okay.
And generally, if they, sorry.
Nope, you're fine.
If they... It didn't work the day before and they're supposed to, then they would have to use sick time for that day. It wouldn't be they could replace that time from the day before for that detail. That would still be overtime always.
Okay.
We don't take our street coverage and put it into a school detail to get that covered.
Yeah, and I know we keep them separate. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that somebody who's going there, if they're on, you know, they've only worked 1 or 2 days and now they're filling a day, mm-hmm. you know, or half a day with that time.
Yep.
And then we end up covering that.
Yeah. No, we end up charging them for all that. And all these details are posted mm-hmm. for overtime.
Yeah.
Okay. You know?
So
it'll always
we post
be
it. People will sign up for it. If they don't sign up for it, but we feel it's a detail that we have to have covered, we will force officers to work okay. on overtime coming in on their off time. So.
Okay, with the hypotheticals, I'll throw one out there.
Sure. Absolutely.
You have an incident in the school, shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Now the whole troop is there.
Mm-hmm.
The resource officer stays.
Mm-hmm.
Overtime?
That's a great question. I would say if our SRO is handling a fight and they've got to sit with the kid for an hour or two, yeah, I'd probably bill the school district for that. If we have a major a major issue, I probably wouldn't bill because we're going to have to call in everybody anyway. I think that's one of those. I don't know if I could do it and get away with
somebody
it.
Somebody will.
Yeah, I think that's a major crime scene, and that's a cost of doing business of course, at that point, right?
Course, you know? Yeah. I don't imagine the billing would be top priority if there was something that significant.
Of course,
It is the, you know, hypothetical
question.
Scenario of, you know, you've got two or three SROs down the road, then we have a call-in, and they're there, you know, 6 extra hours, whatever it is for a major incident.
It gives us the ability, to answer your question, it gives us the ability, we could do that. Mm-hmm. Would there be major pushback? Oh, yeah. And you know, for something like that, like Ray said, it's really the cost of doing business for, you know, what we do. And you know, we budget, and we're very careful with our overtime budget. But we budget, you know, strictly for no major incident to occur.
Of course.
So if we had a major incident like you're talking about, Seaver, I'd have to come to the board and say, we probably need 50 to 100 grand in overtime to cover what this is. It's unforeseen. I can't control it.
Sure.
But this is what happened, right? I could budget for that for a major incident during the course of our budget, but you're going to see our overtime budget probably go up 50 to 100 grand because you're budgeting for something you hope doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's not going to fly.
Right. Yeah. But that's how we when I was in Austin, that's how we budgeted. For many years,
right? You had the
budgeted for the worst case scenario.
Yeah,
you know. Mm-hmm. So, a couple of the items in the agreement that I wanted to cover real quick. We already talked about the costs and conferences, training. The SRO will at all times be an employee of the city. They are not an employee of the school district. They do not control what our officer does. That's part of this agreement. The designated school is the Yorkville High School. The selection and removal of the SRO. The selection process is we have final say, so it is our employee.
Of course.
I will tell you that their attorney and I spatted at that. They wanted the school district to have it, and I'm like, so when Zedeker and I talked, I'm like, listen, I don't tell you who your teachers are. You can't tell me who my, and he goes, I totally agree with you. So that was an easy workout. Mm-hmm. But they did ask to have or participate in the SRO selection process, which we just interviewed for. They were active participants in it. Ray sat in on those interviews because Goldsmith's coming out at the end of this year. And they were a fantastic part of that. We are never going to submit somebody who we don't think can do the job the way we want them to do it. We're never even going to let them put in for it and then interview in front of the school. Mm-hmm. There is a section in here that in the event of an emergency, safety issues, any conditions that constitute a threat to the health and safety or well-being of students, the school district can immediately remove the SRO. It would have to be something with the SRO. The superintendent can do that, and then that's obviously a conversation that the superintendent and I would have. The SRO is again, an employee of the, it's not an employee of the district. The SRO will not handle general rule violations or school conduct violations. They handle matters of criminal only. And that's something that, you know, obviously that, you know, they try a lot of times to get us involved in things that maybe not criminal, but they're trying to educate and they're wanting us to maybe talk to kids. Yes, we will do that. But if a kid in the classroom is acting a fool and they're not following the teacher's rules, we are not going in there unless it is a criminal violation. The SRO will serve and participate on the district's threat assessment team. And then we have the right, I have the right to reassign the SRO during the course of a day based on training or departmental needs, which means I don't necessarily have to put him in the school because, you know, for whatever reason. Now, we always try to have him in that school in a worst case scenario. And that is it as far as the agreement goes, unless you guys have questions.
Oh, good to me. Regarding the removal.
Yes.
The language that's in here, I get the intent. Is there anything that defines any of those? They're not terms, but they are descriptors of the reasons that the SRO could be removed by the district.
We didn't list individual things only because
it's a broad stroke authority to the superintendent.
Yes. And so my take would be, if there's anything of a sexual nature, 100%. Mm. A use of force, an obvious improper use of force. And I say obvious improper, right? Because we investigate all use
right,
of force.
But what you're saying is extremely subjective.
Correct.
In that aspect.
Yes.
So that's I know what the intent is here, to give that flexibility, give that, but you know, when we're talking hypotheticals like these, mm-hmm. I could see where that could be taken out of the intent for that. And
yep.
I'm just looking for making sure that both sides are protected.
Yes.
And language like that does raise a little concern. And I know it's been reviewed and vetted by both sides, both parties, but...
The nice thing for me is if we ever get to the point where the superintendent and I are arguing about pulling an SRO out because he's being maybe overly critical about something, if that superintendent is willing to ruin the relationship between the city and them for that, I'd rather pull the SRO out and not have to deal with any of that, right?
Yeah, hopefully you would get to the point where you're having a conversation before.
Oh, 100%.
Superintendent, I mean, things could happen. Things could escalate extremely quickly. We know the schools
yes.
are very volatile at times in terms
yep.
of how things go. And it could happen instantly, but his right is in here to immediately remove him. Mm-hmm. So, and then deal with the course of action of remedying the issue after the fact.
Yes.
And so
that's where he and I, put it this way, if the superintendent came in and said that Jim Jensen is removed today, mm-hmm. we would be having that conversation today. Right. I have regular phone conversations with the superintendent. We go out to lunch every other month. Matter of fact, that's one of the things I was going to bring up about the future positions for the SRO. It's one of the things we did discuss about, you know, if we have another SRO coming in, I'm going to ask for salary reimbursement for that person, because we are taking somebody from our authorized staff on the street to put in the school.
Sure.
Right. So every other district around, school districts are paying 90 to 100% of the officer's salary for a 9-month period of time when they're in the school. And so it's going to be several years before that potentially could happen. But getting back to your comment, Chris, is the superintendent and I talk all the time. So if they foresee a problem, those phone calls are made immediately, and then we will work on getting the situation rectified immediately. If what he's saying is extremely concerning and we would pull somebody out, yeah, we would pull somebody out. If we backfill, that's up to us. But, yeah.
And then the training, you know, sending someone to a state or a national conference.
Yep.
You said we'd split the cost on that. Now, is that during the 9-month term or is that in the 3-month all term? When would that be scheduled?
Anytime they're going to receive training from the ILSRO and NASRO, which is summertime. They don't do it during the school year. They are going to pay 50% of that.
So they'll pay the conference. We're still paying salary, but they'll pay
correct.
The conference.
But that for us, that's just going to be the general salary for him. They're not getting overtime for that travel or anything. That's part of their normal 40-hour work week, 80-hour pay period, right? So they're not going to get overtime to go to that conference. But that conference is the conference fee, food, per diem, airfare, hotel. It's if it costs me $3,000, they're going to pay $1,500. We pay $1,500, but they will have to approve it, mm-hmm. just like we would have to approve it, which in my opinion is absolutely fair and reasonable.
But now, say we hire the second person, would it be on the table to have the salary paid during that time if it's outside of the 9 months?
So,
if it's within the 9 months. If we're saying we're asking for a salary to be paid, even though he's not in the district, he's not doing it, he's still being paid.
So we would, depending on how you would write the agreement, let's just say that, you know, I went in and said, hey, I want you to cover 100% of the officer's salary for a night while the officer's in the school, mm-hmm. right? Which is would be 177 days, I think, is what the typical annual schedule is for the school. So for that 177 days, they would pay 100% of the salary. That's what I would look to do.
Or time a way for.
Yes. What we would
training.
Do is probably.
That would be nice.
What I've
done
in my previous life is we invoice the school twice a year. Mm-hmm. So the school district didn't get hit for one big lump sum. It was split up. So we would invoice, you know, halfway through the school or at the beginning of the school year and then halfway for the remaining part of the school year. That's in my previous life. That's how we handled it there. But the whole agreement that what I'm going to ask you guys to bring forward to the city council, this whole agreement would have to be redone to include that in there.
Yeah, well, that'll be something once we get to that second, third person, this agreement will be revised to incorporate that.
Yep, this agreement is good for 4 years. Mm-hmm. However, both sides have an out in the agreement. So. Any other questions?
Not for me.
Good.
All right. If it's possible to bring that through to city council, then that's what we'd like to do. And
yep.
So, awesome.
Absolutely.
We're moving that to council.
Yes.
I'd put it in front of everyone.
Yeah.
Is there, what I've always tried to do is I'll reach out to council members, see if they have questions ahead of time. And so I'll try to reach out to everybody, sure. Minus you guys, because you guys have already heard the spiel.
I just don't want something like this go on to consent. It just
totally get it.
Just
totally
make, it,
up to
make
you.
It very visible.
Yep.
Even
yep.
though I'm sure there will be few, if no, comments.
Yeah. The school district is looking, so long as you guys sign off on it, they would be looking to have their school board sign off on it on December 16th meeting. I did ask Dr. Zediker if there was any concern, and he said no. So he did not believe there would be any pushback by any of the board members. Could that happen? Sure. But he's not seeing or hearing of any concern now. So.
Very good. Moving on. PS, it says 2023-19. So this is the update on the Illinois Law Enforcement Accreditation Program.
I'm going to turn it over to Ray.
All right. So I'm just going to go over where we're at now, but I'm start out with just an overview of the beginning. I know some of you probably heard this spiel before, but obviously we're doing policy accreditation with the Illinois Law Enforcement Accreditation Program. It's a state accreditation rather than a federal. There are two tiers, tier one, which is 69 standards, it's your basic core policies, and tier two, which covers 181 standards. You can do tier one and then go back into your tier two later. We chose to do tier two and do them all at once. Tier two is significantly more comprehensive. It pretty much covers about everything you could think of. But obviously it's a lot of work. So it's broken down into four sections: administration, operations, personnel, and training. And so the biggest one's administration. That was contained a lot of the tier two policies, contained a lot of new policy had to be written. So it's taken more of my time than probably the other three sections combined. I've been working on it for 2 years now to this point. Obviously, I have my other duties to do while I'm doing this, and some of the things that have slowed me down is some of these, we've done a lot of these things already, so those were easy. But there's some things we've had to create new policies for, new documents, new ways of doing business. So, you know, I create a new policy, we have to get it down to our officers, and they have to start practicing that policy. And then I have to give them time to practice it, get used to doing it regularly, and then collect the proofs to show that we're doing it, right? So those things take time. And then as you're going down, you find another one. So there was a lot that went into that. So I'm proud of the work I've done, but it's been a long 2 years, and the good news is we're getting closer to wrapping it up here. Obviously, we've talked about the benefits, and we will roll this out as part of a public campaign when we're accredited as, you know, obviously we're looking to reduce liability risk with having strong policy. Shows we care about professional standards and following and state accepted professional standards. And we get the support of the iLEAP team. They are constantly updating standards as practices change. But our agency's a member of the Illinois Police Accreditation Coalition. And I attend that conference, and there's a lot of feedback. There's a distribution list. We all communicate, share policies, share ideas, share forms. So I have access to all that too, which has been a huge help. So that's just the brief overview. Recently, we did a mock assessment September 20th. We had 9 assessors, I believe, came in that day, and they spent the whole day pouring through our policies. Everything's electronic now, so I went into our Power DMS system, I created them all unique logins, and they just broke it up into pieces and went through the whole policy. It is meant to be very critical, overly critical as a matter of fact. So we had an ex-interview with the assessors and our entire command staff, and they were good reviews. They said that they're very impressed at where we were, and you know, thought did a good job to this date, but they, you know, there's a lot of minor corrections we had to go through. So a lot of those included language updates. Now, when I say they're overly critical, the policy standard might say this has to be done every year, and my policy says annually. They want the policy to say every year to match the language word for word. It seems silly. I don't know that it would matter, but if they ask me to do it, I'm just going to do it, right? I mean, why? Takes me 2 seconds to jump in that policy and change that in that word, right? So some of it's stuff like that. Some of it's a little more complicated. Labeling, you know, as I've gone, there's so much time over this, I might label some things different. Once we get a credit, this becomes an ongoing process. So labeling becomes important with your dates and everything else is to keep things separate and highlighting. So I might have a proof, and they might have asked for the annual report, right? An annual report's 59 pages or whatever it is. They wanted me to go in and highlight so that the assessor can go straight to the thing that they need to look at rather than trying to comb through the annual report, which makes sense. It's just, you know, they say put an annual report in there, put an annual report. I didn't go there. So that's one of the things. And then another one is, as this has taken 2 years, your proofs have to be all within a year, showing that you've done these things. And since I've been working on it for 2 years, some of my proofs are outdated. So I have to go back in and find up-to-date proofs from 2024. So those are some of the things I'm working on. I'm moving along pretty good. So that would move us on to the next phase of accreditation, and this is the final thing. So we have our final assessment and an accreditation. So right now we're kind of on track. I talked to the president of iLEAP, and I'm looking to, right now, tentatively early January, to do an online file review. So he will assign assessors that will remotely come into our system and make sure all our files are good. Chief Jensen knows he did this a long time ago at Oswego. Everything used to be a legitimate file in a file cabinet, in a folder, and they had to come through and comb through your files and do it in person. Now everything's electronic, so they can do it remotely from the comfort of their office, right? So that would take place over about a week. They would go through and that's that final review of my files as opposed to the mock where they're overly critical, right? So from that process, they might say, okay, these look great, but maybe tweak this thing before we come to our on-site. Maybe this still doesn't maybe meet the standard, right? That's the point of that is just get a little bit of feedback and to do that final, hey, you're good to go and check the box that your files are good. So after your files are good, it's time to come on-site. And we're hoping to do that late January, early February. The assessors would come here. They'd be here about 1 to 2 days. And that is when they're going to actually come here and make sure that the things we say we're doing and that we provided proofs for electronically, that we're actually doing them in person. So there's a lot of preparation that goes with that. 30 days prior to the on-site, they're going to need a community profile. It's a document that contains community agency history, populations, demographic, type of government, staffing, crime calls for service, traffic stop data, mission, values, and goals. So it's basically somebody who doesn't know anything about your community can pick up this document and know everything they need to know, and that helps them as they're going through policy as well is to match the way we're doing business to our type of agency and population and everything else. So where that's important is you take crime analysis reports. We had just talked about it earlier in this meeting. I'm not going to have some monster crime analysis that breaks down these gangs working in these areas and everything else. So once they read my community profile, my crime reports, they'll understand that. So it gives them some context when they're looking at my proofs on crime analysis. I'm not going to have that type of crime analysis, right? So that's where that becomes important. I have to create an agenda for the on-site visit. And the reason that is it's a whole thing. There is a 2-hour public phone-in session that is part of this. So there has to be an agenda because it's technically a public meeting. There will be media posts ahead of time letting the public know how the process works, when they can call in, how they can call in, and they can give feedback as they deem necessary. So, you know, I don't know how that's going to go. It might go like every public meeting we have where no one participates, or it might get a bunch of people call. I don't know yet, right? So
it's calling only, no in person, just call in.
It's call in, you know, reading their page. They will allow written and email to come in too, but I don't expect it. But whatever process they give me to do, I'm going to put that out to the public so they know how to do it if they choose to do it. So
I would rather do it in person myself.
I would too.
And if we can do that, hard. That's what we'll do.
Post a zoning variance for the opening of a cannabis dispensary. We'll have lots of people here.
Correct. Go back even farther or talk about a landfill.
Depending on what they say, they'll question us and like, hey, this person is saying this is what's going on, and then we would have to either find proof it's not going on, mm-hmm. or that this person called and made a complaint before and we've dealt with the complaint, or what the person's saying is right, and we have to deal with it right at that time. So
I agree. If we can do it in person, and if when we get close to that, I'll find out. I would personally rather do that too. So the other aspects of the on-site is they're going to do a department tour to our entire police department, so know where everything is. They may meet with elected or other city officials. That would all be set up ahead of time based on people's schedules. They're going to inspect vehicles. They're going to interview employees. They're going to do ride-alongs with some of our officers. They're going to do an audit of our evidence vault. There's a lot that entails. That's why it's going to take. He estimated, talking to me, the president, that a day and a half, but they tell you 1 to 2 days. So, I mean, it depends how things go. It might take a full 2 days. I assume they're going to have to go to CanCom dispatch and see that they're doing business the way that, you know, they told me they're doing business and when I included their proofs, right? Under the communications section. And then finally it ends with an exit interview like we had for the mock, where they sit down and tell us how everything went, and you know, hopefully it's all good news. I suspect it will be. And then that concludes that portion of it. Once we're done there, the assessors, it goes to council review. The lead assessor of that assessment group is going to submit a report to the ILEAP council, or to the ILEAP committee chair, and he'll send it to the council for review. They review it. If they grant it, we're granted accreditation for 4 years. At that point, I start the cycle all over again, you know, collecting proofs for 4 years. So that's just, you know, it's a longer time frame, but you have to really be on point. The good thing is you've already built this out in the system. Now it's just creating within the system is the reminders to collect these proofs. You know, if we have to have a quarterly report for something, I'm going to need 16 proofs, right? So, you know, 4 quarters a year for 4 years, just for that one standard. So most of it is annual stuff. There's not a lot of quarterly or twice a year stuff in there. Most of it's once a year. So most of it's going to be, I'll have to have a proof for 2025, 26, 27, 28, right? And then I go through this process all over again with the file review and the on-site, and you start right over and you get granted accreditation again. So, once granted accreditation, there will be an award ceremony. They like to send a member of the ILEAP Council and a member of the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police Board of Officers. We'll do a city council to present us with our accreditation plaque, and it's kind of the time to spike the football, as they say. So,
spike the plaque.
Yes, spike. I don't want to spike the plaque. Work too hard during that. I don't want to break it. Yeah, correct. Spike the plaque. So that's all of it. Of what I know, you know, I've been through everything so far up to this last phase. So the last phase is I'm going to be working through that as it comes, because my only knowledge of it right now is from him having been through it and from talking to the president of ILEAP. So he's sending me a lot of documents that I got to prepare for this on-site. So that's my time frame. If I'm unable to meet it, we might move it back a little bit, but I'm close and I'm ready to get this done and get accredited. So.
That's could also depend on, you know, the schedules of those that would come out for the on-site file mm-hmm. review. There's other agencies that are looking to become at that same time frame that we are, so we got to get in the queue. When we get in the queue, hopefully that'll help.
Yes, that was a concern initially, because I initially asked him about what's February look like, just to make sure I had time, and he's like, we're getting real busy in February, March, with a lot of other agencies that are going to be ready at that time. So, talking to a lot of colleagues, most agencies are starting to move towards accreditation. most people are choosing the state route. Obviously, then you know you show you're sharing standards with your state, especially with states, the way police departments in different states do business is night and day.
Safety Act. Yeah, I mean, these standards comply with the Safety Act requirements.
Well, I think you've accomplished a heck of a lot.
It's been a lot of work.
Gone through many accreditation processes. I know what you go through, and to be where you're at after only 2 years, it's...
Thank you.
It's good.
It's been quite...
Ray is the only one in the organization that, you know, we've got other people that could obviously do it, yes. Ray is just, he's focused on what he needs to. He's policy-driven. He's policy-knowledgeable. He's organized in this position. You have to have all of that in order to get that accreditation. And Ray has just done an outstanding job. I know when I applied for this job, this was in my 5-year plan, you know, being, you know, accredited, getting, you know, working with the organization to become an accredited professional organization. So this is Ray.
So he just said, you can't retire and you're not leaving.
I'm retired before he is, dude. That's all I know.
Okay, to give you a little cover, my question was going to be, after this process, when you go to the renewals, will you maybe consider bringing somebody to shadow or learn to spread that? Maybe it's the quarterlies or something like that there to have somebody that also can relieve the pressure off of you, but...
Yeah.
Have another person that's capable as you go through, because it's going to be in perpetuity unless we decide we're out.
Right, and I don't know a scenario we'd want to get out unless ILEAP starts to go real bad and isn't aligning with our values anymore, right? Yeah, I think there's several scenarios. One is we bring someone in right away and teach them how to do it, and they kind of take it over. Or there's accreditation team built into Power DMS. It was going to bog me down and moving forward in this, and you know it's initial, so I was doing it myself, but there are ways to set things that assign people to get you the proof so you don't have to constantly be looking for them yourself. That might be another way.
Great opportunity, you know, for leadership opportunities.
Absolutely.
And roles. You know, what you've done with policy, because today we talked about it, policy is key. You know, if you have bad policies, you have a bad department. If you have good policies, you usually have an excellent
And you're not protecting
department.
So liability is
absolutely
as well. So.
And as we know from, you know, cases we have to hear, you know, of, you know, lawsuits, we don't have many.
No.
Very, very few. That's not the way it used to be. So, you know, it's a testament to policies being in place and setting the right direction.
Well, and absolutely, I think this is a good way to develop somebody that you think is moving their way up, is work on this, because I've learned a lot about it. You really learn a lot about your organization, more than you thought, you know. It's been a good experience on that level, as you understand things on a higher level from the policy side of it. I think that you're right. It is a good opportunity to get somebody else involved.
We have, over our 5-year, you know, we're just going through the budget, FY26, and preparing and then presenting to Bart and John and Rob. We have identified a future position as an accreditation manager. I want to say it would be FY27. I could be wrong on the fiscal year. And that's obviously dependent on, you know, how are we doing as a city? Is it something we can do? Is it something maybe we can do internally and not fill that position? Or maybe we need officers instead of a civilianized position. This is not something I would typically look to have a sworn up person do, because you're paying a lot more money for a sworn officer than you would be for a civilian personnel to maintain the accreditation. So it is something we've talked about. We do have it in the long-term budget under personnel, but whether or not we actually do it or not, I'm not quite sure. It's going to depend on the needs at that time for staffing.
Okay. Good. Nice work, Rick.
This is great.
Thank you.
Can't wait to see that plaque.
Yeah, me too. I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah.
A little piece of cardboard bigger than that.
We're going to give Dan something else to slam down.
Dan's going to get the little foam one.
Hopefully it's not a laminated 8x10 certificate. No, I've seen
it. Don't worry, we'll order you one if it is.
I appreciate it. I would hope so. I got to have something to put in the lobby.
All right, nice work. PS 2024-20, meeting schedule. Do the odd month first Thursdays work? January, March?
I'm good through April.
You don't care.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to have one in January, February, March, April.
Just to make up
that special meeting.
We won't have any the rest of the year.
Tell me how you really feel. Chris, do you have any position on it? Okay.
They look good.
Yeah,
July 3rd might be a little challenging, though, for them, but you know, we'll see how that goes.
You guys just tell me. We'll do it whenever you want.
Yeah, that's fine.
We can always move them when we get close, but yeah, just it's a little far to plan out that trip. But yeah.
No, that's good.
Yeah. Awesome.
Is there any old business? Any additional business?
Yes. Bike path issues.
Yep.
I talked to the chief a little bit about it. I had one of my neighbors ask me about why we don't have stop signs on the bike path. I did a little checking and found that Oswego has them on 71. I just personally had one issue where I'm assuming it was one of these professional bike riders, you know, that races and comes down Kennedy, flies through the intersection. Of course, I'm pulling up to the intersection. I can't see half a mile down the road. Luckily, I went to pull up slowly to see down the road, and he came through probably doing 30 miles an hour. I don't know how fast bicycles go these days, but
right.
And so when my neighbor brought this up, I said, well, maybe I'll bring it up and see what, I'm just curious as to what the law is.
Can you enforce?
You know, and does this, if there is a requirement.
Yeah. Right. So stop signs, for us to enforce a stop sign, has to be on a public roadway, number one, or unless we've adopted the vehicle code into our city ordinance, then we can do that. But stop signs specifically also are designated through MUTCD to be a specific size. So a stop sign this big as compared to a normal stop sign that is this big as an example, I can't write one for that because it would be improperly signed, I should say. The bike trail is public property unless it is an HOA run or private, which
okay.
I don't know. I'm thinking of the ones like down south in Wyndette Ridge. I don't think that's city property.
Yeah,
I think that's all private, and we can't enforce
right.
that on private.
34, 47, 71.
Kennedy.
Yeah, if they are in the right of way. Yeah, the one you're thinking of, you know, within the neighborhoods, those can't be enforced.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I was thinking of the one
on the state highways. That's an IDOT issue.
It's yeah. IDOT, or some of them are IDOT, county, and then we have city for some of them. So it's a whole variety of them. But then, like, the ones that cross a public street, I always thought that you could enforce them. But that's finding out, is there something we have to adopt with that in order to be enforced? We don't really have those signs anyway. Well, actually, no, there are some.
You have them at the major intersections that are traffic controlled, like the stop lights.
Yes, there are.
We have that.
Quite
Game
a few
Farm
at
34 is an example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, I was just thinking over... On the west side, we do have them on 34 on that section. But it also could have been the timing of when they went in the roads, whether they changed them, because I know IDOT will change their standards. Mm-hmm. Kennedy's a different process because that's not a IDOT road. So it's interesting, yeah, because I know some communities do have them.
Well, I think my neighbor's son was actually given a ticket for hitting a bicycle that ran through the intersection, and that's when he brought it up to me.
So there's a current case that the city is in where a vehicle hit a bicyclist crossing at Game Farm in 34. The car was getting ready to turn right onto 34 to go east. The bicyclist was coming down the bike path, didn't stop, entered the intersection, hit the front of the car, and did a whirly-cue and got hurt. Statute can go that, or if the person was heading westbound on the normal roadway, because they had the green light, they had the right of way. But this person was on the bike path, which had an actual sign that said, to cross, you have to hit the button to cross, and then you have to wait till you have the walk sign to do it, right? The officer also entered the intersection, and it wasn't clear. Because you got to enter the intersection, it has to be clear. Now, where that's going to go, I don't know. So, I don't know.
I guess it's a bicyclist, or is he a pedestrian? And, you know, is there a difference in the law? I don't know.
Let me do this. Can we enforce stop signs on bike paths at intersections? And then ordinance, and I'll present this to Kathy and see if there's any research.
That's just,
it's just a question.
It might be more of a cosmetic solution if they can't enforce it. You know, you put the stop sign up and hope that
I would agree with you 100%. Yeah, I don't know how you could enforce something like that. But on the other hand, is if there was, insurance-wise, if there's some...
Could it save somebody in a car?
Says the city has, you know, should be doing something about, you know, and we're not.
Yeah.
Are we liable for, you know?
Right.
I don't know.
I'll present the two questions to Kathy. The first one is, can we enforce stop signs on bike paths at intersections? And that's probably more public property. And then. Can we get an ordinance, or is there such a thing as an ordinance that would cover that we could write under city code and not the IBC? And I'll email you guys out and just don't respond all.
And most of the time I say, you know, the kid, it's the little kids that stop.
Yeah.
You know, get off their bikes.
Yeah.
It's the older ones that...
Yep.
But on roads we control, you know, as long as we follow the regulations for the road, we can probably install the signs, you know, stop signs, yield signs, whatever. But on the IDOT roads, we'd have to get permission at any of those intersections if we wanted them.
Yeah.
So there's
I guess in my mind, I'm wondering, you know, if you hit a bicyclist going, you know, tearing through an intersection, is it your fault or is it...
It's always going to be the driver's fault.
Yeah.
I know it's usually always the driver's fault.
Yeah. It will.
I'll see what Kathy says and see if she can do any research, and then I'll just email all you guys. Probably be after the holidays.
I promise my next door neighbor I would bring it up.
100%.
Good question.
We'll have an answer for you.
April.
Yeah, the first meeting in May.
The only thing I had was downtown traffic.
So, good question. And I said I was going to get to that, and you reminded me.
You can read your mind.
Gotcha.
It's a discussion.
Yes.
Downtown traffic.
So, had a chamber meeting this morning, and it was one of the things I discussed as part of YPD's report. We are focusing our efforts in the downtown area. Sergeant Strop, our traffic sergeant, he is putting together a plan. We are holding it. It's going to be the first thing we're going to be doing, pushing our sergeants with kind of our 2025 goals, which is basically solving a problem. Mm-hmm. And in our January meeting, I'll cover our department goal for, you know, 2025. But we're going to put it out to our sergeants to come up with a plan. In the meantime, our Sergeant Strop will be coordinating efforts with the Sheriff's Office and ISP. To come in and really hit that downtown, running details in the downtown area, specific details. We will probably pull officers from the street on normal calls. Mm-hmm. You know, if we got four people working, we'll put two in the downtown area, and that's what their job's going to be for that period of time. Hopefully we'll have some county deputies with us and ISP to do nothing but hitting car after car after car. Now, my take is I can stop 100 cars. It doesn't mean I'm solving the problem if everybody gets written warnings. You start writing a couple semis, you mess with their stuff, that word will get out,
yeah.
And people will slow down. You also slow semis down, cars are going to slow down.
Yes.
Right? And so while I can't force somebody to write a ticket, it's against the law for me to do that, our goal is to solve a problem. So I can hit my head against the wall 100 times, and you know, if I do it 101, am I going to get the same results as I did the first 100 times, right? And that's kind of where we're wanting to take this goal for 2025. I get people don't like writing tickets. I understand that. Does it create issues, especially for truck drivers? Yeah, it does. But then don't be speeding. Right? That's my take. So, yeah, that's kind of where we're looking to hit. That downtown area is going to be a primary focus for us.
And I will say you guys do a good job on PR, Facebook, et cetera. If it's something that this could be stepped up, you know, the joint partnership that you guys would do with ISP and the county, you know, more than just a photo and the post about something like this. If there's some type of a release or a short video of, you know, the engagement of what you're doing, the reason, background, and the intent, you know, through the campaign, when you guys go through and do that, that would be great to be able to put it out there. You know, you guys reach a lot of people, you know, chambers reach a lot of people, but there's a lot that can be done to try to communicate. Yes, this is the step that we as a city are taking to make our downtown better. You know, more than just the post of, hey, we ran traffic patrol for 2 hours, wrote, you know, we had 25 citations.
One of the things that I always hesitate to do specifically to that, because it has the opposite effect with people. People say, well, why don't you go out onto Greenbrier? Because they're always speeding on Greenbrier. So people will then say, well, you've got this area, this area, this area. So it almost has the opposite effect, and it identifies and gets people stirred up about other areas in town. That's been my experience. Not saying that would necessarily be here, but it's something that's always in the back of my head. The other side of it is then you're going to have also the naysayers like, well, cops are just doing this and that. And while we want our message out there, I think we have to carefully craft
And that's
what we're putting out.
And it may not be at the time you do it. It may be an after the fact. Pull the statistics, what you've done, what the outcome is. And then, who knows, maybe it's a 6 months after the fact, after tracking data, because I know we've got data now. You know, we run the cameras down there for a couple weeks. So we pulled a good set of data. You know, most people had no idea that those were sitting down there in the middle of the street, which is great, because you just get people's real, you know, driving habits as compared to when they light up. So it's a good collection. So see what happens after those patrols and then run the data again. See how it compares.
And then continue to follow up after that, because what I believe is going to happen is it's going to slow down for a period of time.
Right.
My ultimate goal, what I would love to see, if I had, if we could say we're going to do this and it worked, right? I want people to think about driving downtown like they think about driving through Sugar Grove. You speed in Sugar Grove, you get a ticket. You speed in our downtown, you get a ticket. That's the mindset that I want people to come into our downtown. That they may not get stopped, but they know people have stopped and they know people are getting tickets, because then they slow down. We also have, as a city, you guys have, you know, are looking to and have invested money into this, right? And so if we're increasing the number of people that we're going to be bringing to our downtown, the likelihood of somebody getting hit and hurt is greater.
Yes.
So our focus needs to be now, so that we get that word out before anything goes on with the downtown, the improvements go on in the downtown, if that's going to happen. So that's kind of our focus and what we want to do.
And so we'd have to have coordination with IDOT to reduce speeds on it. Since it's an IDOT road, we'd have to petition them to reduce that. You know, that home rule or not, that aside, we can't just do that on our own. We have to petition them.
Correct.
And we have to have a reason to want to reduce that speed, which maybe in the future, with our development downtown, that could be caused to do that. But not
what I have seen with speed studies with IDOT, sometimes people do speed studies and the 85th percentile is X, which is above the posted speed limit. I've seen some cases where they've raised the speed limit.
Yeah, it could go the other way.
It could go the opposite effect on that. So, you know, again, carefully crafted messages, putting stuff out timely and consistently, working with IDOT. Would I love to, I mean, I think a downtown Plainfield, when you take 126, you don't go left like you're going to 55, but you go straight. They have those raised medians in that area there that You know, you hit those going 50 miles an hour, man, you're going to do some damage.
Yeah.
But you hit those at 30, you're going to be okay.
And those right? are is that something roads we could too. Do? They yes. changed the geometry. When they rebuilt this road, it was designed as a four-lane highway.
Right.
Not a downtown.
Right. Yeah. State highway.
It changed everything.
And is there something we can do with IDOT specific to that? I'm not saying the raised medians are where we need to go or the raised, you know, speed bumps. I'm not saying that's what we need to do, but that's maybe, just an example of
maybe we change instead of a stoplight, you know, it's a stop and go. I mean, that does stop people. That truly slows them down. Mm-hmm. You've seen it. Whenever that light goes to a stop and go, you know, because it's just generally out, traffic doesn't fly downtown at all.
Yeah. But I don't know what that would do to traffic through town.
What's that?
I don't know what that would do to the backup to the traffic.
To have that, because you would be, every vehicle would be stopping almost completely.
During rush hour would be bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
People would find a different way around them.
Yeah. Maybe the Alamein Bridge helps.
It's fine with me.
Yeah. I mean, the Alamein Bridge. Honestly, we don't get a huge benefit of semis running through town. They're not. When you look at where the trucks are filling up gas, it's not in downtown.
No.
You're not getting any semis filling up gas downtown. They're doing
north or south.
West or south. Yep. There's three different places for them to get gas, two of which are in town.
Yep.
So, and, you know, if they go out to me, so be it. Honestly. Because cars move pretty well when they figure out the stop and go downtown. You know, when we have that red flashing, it's the semis that give you trouble.
I think big part of the problem down there is you're downhill in both directions, and those semis get moving, and they don't want to hit the brakes. Mm-hmm. And so that light turns, and they just barrel through.
Oh, I've seen quite a few of them just go through. And it doesn't matter if you're coming from the north down.
Yep.
You know, they just go.
Yep.
Once I get Sam's report, I'll send it to you guys. That way you guys can have it on 47 in the downtown area. So. Mm-hmm. We'll keep you guys up to date on that. Maybe what we'll do, if you're okay with it, Dan, can I add that as just an agenda item each month for 47 pressers?
Yeah. Make my wife happy. She's tired of the semis flying by.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Keep the state's attorney's office busy. That's what I say.
Why is that, Dan?
Okay.
Today when I was there, Brenda asked a girl if she wanted to plead guilty or not guilty. And she'd already pled guilty like 3 months ago and was there with her traffic certificate. I said, Kendall County makes you plead twice. Once is enough. I think that's it. Shall
that's
we adjourn?
It. Sure.
Okay. 7:19, and we will adjourn.